good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being because we have with us on the line the great state of Maine, Charlotte Isabey, who has had a fascinating life. She worked for the State Department, traveled throughout the world for many years. When she came back to the United States, she was in very key position in the Reagan administration, the Department of Education, for several years until she found out what they were really doing and how they were going to betray the our educational system. And so eventually she got many of the documents out of the safe, administration, so that she would have a record of really what was planned, the progressive dumbing down of the children of America. And, of course, in recent years, why she has written a book called The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, which we do carry. But she's always such a pleasure to have here with us on Radio Liberty. Charlotte, thank you so much for being with us.
Good evening, Dr. Stan. I'm always happy to be with you. And I always learn a lot on your program. It's not just from you, but your listeners.
Well, we were going to talk a little bit about, I think, some of the real crisis situations in the world today. You know, had the United States simply gone into Afghanistan and captured Osama bin Laden and destroyed the Al-Qaeda movement in Afghanistan, we would have had the sympathies of the entire world behind us. After all, we'd been attacked. Here was a chance to retaliate, to take out Al-Qaeda, to capture the people we said were responsible for the attack. But we didn't do that. We used going into Afghanistan as a justification by some rather twisted concept of logic to justify going into Iraq, which had always been the plan, and anybody who doubts that has only to go to the website, newamericancentury.org, that's newamericancentury.org, and read the plan that was laid out in 1998 for an attack on Iraq. And who were the people who were planning it? Why, Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and Paul Wolfowitz, part of a little 25-man group, one woman actually, 17 of them from the Council on Foreign Relations, had laid out a plan for an international order that was going to dominate the world. That's what it was really all about. And it was planned long before the Afghan attack. We needed an excuse to go to war, and, well, we had one on the 11th of September. But since then, we've really lost progressive support throughout the world. This is my concern. And and not only that, but now, of course, as the Al-Qaeda becomes more brazen, we've done more to recruit people into this Islamic terrorist movement by going into Afghanistan than Osama bin Laden could have done in a lifetime. And now we see the move to destabilize Saudi Arabia. And if they can force the Americans and the British technicians to leave there, why, the oil production of Saudi Arabia will be endangered. And I really believe at that point why the regime will be on the edge of destruction, and we'll have to move into Saudi Arabia too, and that will inflame the Muslims of the world even more. And we're in a no-win situation, and yet, you know, if it looks like Saudi Arabia is going to fall, America would have to invade. This is my concern. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, we see the tempo of violence picking up in Saudi Arabia, and we're really not, neither the Saudis or we are doing anything very effectively about it.
Well, it's extraordinary that after this many years in being out there in Saudi Arabia and having cultivated, you know, a really good relationship with Saudi Arabia and Aramco in there, and I used to work in Middle Eastern affairs in the State Department, that this band of, I call them real criminals, that's what they are, these neocons, that they have brought us to our knees all over the world. I mean, all over the world, because you've got the whole Muslim world ready to blow us up at any moment. Personally, I guess maybe I work too long in Middle Eastern affairs. I think we have really justified it. We have justified their actions at this point. I'm not saying that I don't go along with any of their actions, but we have created an absolute hornet's nest through our foreign policy, dictated by these very people you're talking about, and who are most of them former Marxists, which is really very interesting, isn't it? It's like they want to bring the United States down. And how could they possibly do a better job if they made an effort? And they obviously have made an effort, and not just in that particular area, in Iraq. If we had wanted to deal with the situation with Saddam Hussein, we could have taken him out back, old Bush could have taken him out first time around. My son was out there. He was in the Marines, and that was their goal. And you talk to him about what's going on right now, and you'll get a very interesting explanation of what's wrong and what's right, and nothing's right. But nothing's right anywhere. No. But the reason for that is not a mistake. It's not a mistake that we are making mistakes all over the world. This is success. It's just like in education. People say they think it's a mistake the kids can't read. That's not a mistake. All the billions of dollars that go into education have nothing to do with teaching them to read. It's brainwashing, and that is the goal, brainwashing for world government. What we're looking at in the Middle East has to do with implementing world government. What we're looking at with George Bush, with the Free Trade Association, and putting in the hemisphere, the trade hemisphere here, that's world government, like the European Union. And America's had better wake up fast. And something good did happen, Stan. I was just reading about it. Evidently, the Europeans voted June 12th on who they were going to send to the European Parliament. And they really sent a message. The Europeans, they elected people who don't want the European Union. And so it's sort of like the Trojan horse. They're going to be sending people, quite a few representatives who are going to be going into Parliament there hate the European Union, and they're going to do everything possible to, from within the European Union, destroy it. Did you know that?
Yes, I did. And yes. Of course, I think, Charlotte, what we have to realize is that most people want to be free. Most people do not want this fascist world society that the elitists are planning. Most people in Europe do not want the European Union. Right. Most people here in the United States didn't want NAFTA or CAFTA or FAFTA or whatever the new one wanted, the Free Trade Associations of America, the Free Trade Association of Central America. The average American is a good person who loves his freedom. But you see, the elite don't want that. And so they have an agenda, and they'll fix elections. They'll use their control over the media to get the people elected they want. Here in the United States, we talk about democracy, and yet they run one candidate on the Republican Party, one candidate on the Democrat Party, and the candidate who stands for the Constitution, Michael Perutka, is never mentioned by the media. And I'm sure that there's not one in 1,000 Americans who's ever heard of Michael Perutka, the Constitution Party, and there's a fine gentleman who certainly espouses the conservatives, pro-American, godly beliefs that I think most Americans believe in, and they will never be allowed to hear of him because media is controlled largely. And if anybody doesn't believe that, we have a wonderful article written by Richard Harwood, who is the ombudsman for the Washington Post. And back in October of 1993, he talked about the control of the media and the control of the government by an organization called the Council on Foreign Relations. And he said, this is the closest thing America has to a ruling elite. And he's absolutely right, because they control the right-wing newspapers, they control the left-wing newspapers, and they control those in between. The same thing was true of television and radio. And the average American doesn't understand that the CFR is a front for a secret society, and that's covered beautifully in a book written by Bill Clinton's mentor. Bill Clinton understands that.
That's right.
I'm sure George Bush and John Kerry understand that. I'm sure that John Edwards, you know mm-hmm. who John Edwards is, of course, mm-hmm. The senator from North Carolina, 2 weeks ago, you know, he was over in Italy meeting with the men who run the world, the Bilderbergers.
Mm-hmm.
And not a word of that in the American media, other than one or two right-wing publications and yeah. on the Internet. Here are the most powerful men in the world, David Rockefeller, Henry Kissinger, the leaders of the mm-hmm. banks of Europe, and the financial leaders of, and industrial leaders of the world, and members of the nobility, and the leaders of the Socialist Party. And who do they invite from America, in addition, of course, to the usual suspects, but Ralph Reed of the Christian Coalition, because they want to manipulate the Christians, and then Senator John Edwards from North Carolina, which means he will probably, as somebody has said, maybe Kerry will drop out and he'll be the candidate, because he's certainly a lot more attractive than Kerry is, but everybody's feeling that he will be, or he has already been picked for the vice presidential position. The elite just haven't told the American people that yet.
Right. Yeah, and the Ralph Reed thing, I was talking to a friend in Maryland today, and she said that he's been selected for some job working for Bush, right?
His job is to mobilize the Christians and get them to toe the line, you know, as you
it's
just
disgusting.
As you take the cattle, you know, you herd them into the docks, you know, where they're going to be slaughtered. So they're herding the Christians to do it exactly what they're supposed to do and vote exactly as they're supposed to.
They're utilizing
the Christian population here, manipulating them, and they're so good at it.
It's beyond belief how the Christian fundamentalist Christian population out there that vote for George Bush and support him no matter what, that I thought maybe, you know, when you have Ralph Reed, well, they don't even know what the Bilderbergers are, probably, those Christian voters. But when you have Ralph, I really was surprised when I read that. I mean, I'm not surprised that Ralph Reed would do that, knowing Ralph Reed. But I'm surprised that they would have allowed that, figuring that possibly the Christians might wake up. But no, they're not going to wake up. They're not even going to care what the Bilderbergers are, or what you're talking about, or what I'm talking about. Because there's something, there's some virus that is spread amongst those people that they just can't see. Evil this president is doing. They think he is carrying out the word of God.
Well, I think that there's a spiritual blindness that swept the country, and I think that it is really is a spiritual problem. People can accept what they're told, especially when their Christian leaders tell them this is the way that it is. And there are a few good Christian leaders who are really trying to point out what's going on. But so many of the people are simply going along because everybody else is going along. And I don't know whether I've ever told you, but I was part of the group that picked George Bush to become the president. Did I ever tell you the story?
No.
Well, it was 1999, and they said, you know, what we need to get a good Christian in, we certainly don't want Al Gore as the president, let's get the Christian leaders of America together and let's pick a president we can all agree on and we'll all get behind him. So they picked 22 Christian leaders. I mean, these are really the big guns in the Christian conservative movement.
I know who you're talking about, yes.
Right, and mm-hmm. don't ask me what I was doing there, but I was there. I was mm-hmm. one of the 22 or so.
They would never have invited me. Go ahead.
Well, anyway, the time we went back to Washington, D.C., of course, we had to do this at our own expense, and we interviewed Gary Bauer and certainly Steve Forbes and Senator Bob Smith and Alan Keyes and the congressman who was running at the time. I've forgotten who there were six candidates that we interviewed the first time around, and it was very interesting. The only one I was really impressed with was Alan Keyes. The rest of them, they knew the right answers, but I'm not certain that they really were convinced of anything they said. I mean, Steve Forbes knew all the right answers. Probably the one that impressed me the most was Senator Bob Smith. I thought that he might very well have had a chance to be an effective candidate. And then, of course, we went back a second time, and there were four or five people we hadn't interviewed. One of them was Elizabeth Dole, but she wouldn't meet with the Christian leaders. One was John McCain. He wouldn't meet with the Christian leaders. Mm-hmm. One was Pat Buchanan, who came in and gave the most marvelous dissertation I've ever heard. Spontaneously, when he was asked a question by one of the people there, Senator Armstrong, he gave a magnificent 20-minute response. And then, of course, it was George W. Bush. And we were told we couldn't take any notes. We couldn't record anything that was said. And, you know, of course, George W. understood all the answers to the questions. He'd been carefully briefed ahead of time exactly what to say. We each had a question to ask. My question was, how do you feel about outcome-based education? Oh, he said, I'm against it. I kept it out of Texas.
Oh, but I know. You told me. You did tell me that. That's the biggest lie I ever heard.
He actually brought it in by executive order. But, of course, the question by the man sitting next to me, who was John Stormer, who wrote Nanterre College Treason, was, well, Governor, if you were elected president and Congress passed a law saying dealing with transportation or education that was unconstitutional, would you sign it?
Mm-hmm.
And George Bush, of course, he hadn't been primed on that one. So he sat there and he said, I don't understand the question. And then, so John said, well, let me simplify it then. If you were the president and Congress passed legislation dealing with education and it was unconstitutional, the legislation was unconstitutional, would you sign it? And George Bush sat there. Now, this is the man who today leads our country. And he said, well, I'm going to have to think about that. And that was his response. And, what you have to understand is everything is illusion. When he's told what to say, he does a magnificent job.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that he may very well be a very nice man, but the people who surround him control him. He does really what is told, and I really believe that Dick Cheney is running everything that's going on there, and Dick Cheney represents the power elite. And this is the great tragedy. Dick Cheney was part of this little cabal of 25 people who back in 1997 planned to take over our country. And for the skeptic out there, don't take my word for it. Get on a computer and go to www.newamericancentury.org and read everything on the website, or get my syllabus on the Iraq, the Untold Story, which covers all of the senseless wars of the last century, including this war, and has all the material from the Project for the New American website, and explains exactly where to go on their website to find out what it's all about. And if people will do that, they will come to realize that we have been manipulated into a war that had nothing to do with September 11th, had nothing to do with the war on terrorism. It was part of an effort to control the oil wealth of the Middle East. And, of course, once our troops are there, I think it was only a short step to removing the governments in Syria, in Iran, and certainly in Saudi Arabia. And if you question that, the real plan, we actually have an interview that where William Crystal, who leads the group now, in an interview with Ted Koppel, where he made that very statement that I just made. And Ted Koppel said, what about Saudi Arabia? And he said, well, we're going to replace that government as well with the passage of time.
This is really scary. I think it's absolutely true. And, you know, there's also a book that's just come out that I was looking at. It's called The High Priests of War. It's by Michael Collins Piper. He wrote the book on Kennedy, the Kennedy assassination, too. He's quite a writer. And this covers exactly what you're talking about, and it exposes the whole crowd. I'm looking at this ad. Wolfowitz, Pearl, Crystal, Kissinger, Douglas Feist, the whole crowd. And it's a bombshell. And actually, I think it's American Free Press that sells it. But I think if you go on the Internet and just type in the High Priests of War, William Collins, Michael Collins Piper, that's a book that everybody should be reading, because it tells exactly what you're talking about, Dr. Stan.
Except for one thing, I've read Michael Collins Piper in the past, and he would ascribe everything to a Zionist conspiracy. And I don't believe this is a Zionist conspiracy. I believe it's a satanic conspiracy. I believe it's a conspiracy. There's always been a conspiracy against God. If anybody reads Jeremiah 11:9 or Ezekiel 22:25, it talks about the conspiracy against God. That's what the conspiracy is. It's not the Zionists. It's not the Skull and Bones. It's not the Council on Foreign Relations or the Bilderbergers. They're all part of it. But, of course, they're simply manifestations of this satanic conspiracy that is drawing us, America, into World War III. And I believe God's wrath is going to come on America because America has turned its back on God. We're going to be back here in just a moment here with Charlotte Isabey. And, of course, we'll welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and for a few minutes while our listeners are listening to a commercial announcement, Charlotte and I will simply cover some of the things. Somebody had called in, a listener had asked about Michael Moore's new movie, Fahrenheit, I think it's Fahrenheit 9-1-1. Do you know anything at all about that?
No, but I'm anxious to see it, and I read something about it today where one of our good conservatives who saw it thought it was excellent, and I think it's. I had a feeling we weren't going to be allowed to see it. I'm glad that it is going to be shown all over the country. I think that he's a very clever writer, and there's. I don't think he's very knowledgeable about some things. He wrote a book. What was it called? A year or so ago, that dealt with education, and it really did show that he wasn't knowledgeable at all about education.
And he hates the right of people to keep and bear arms. He's certainly not a constitutionalist.
Yeah, no, he's not one of us.
He's. I don't know if you saw him at the. I think it was the Academy Awards or one of the Emmy presentations, and he used it as an opportunity to attack the administration. I just felt it a very poor taste. No one would ever accuse this man of having any class.
Very excuse. Yes, you're right. Low class guy, and. He's a real know-it-all, but he manages to get away with it because he's quite amusing. But I understand that he has gone after the major thing that I read about the film is that clip from 9/11, the day that the horrible tragedy took place, where Bush is down reading to the kindergarten children about
the goat. Don't forget
the goat. Yes, and that's probably what's going to make the movie, because most of the networks have made sure that the American people don't see that clip too often.
No, of course, this is the clip. The president already knows that the Twin Towers have been attacked. The second plane is at the South Tower, and then he goes into the room and he's sitting there. And then, of course, somebody comes, whispers in his ear, and says, "America's." We don't know what they said, but they were letting him know that that America was under attack. And so he sits there for an additional 7 minutes.
That's right.
Before he gets up and leaves. But of course, this is all going to be used to push the candidacy of John Kerry. Now, I don't like either political candidate, but you see, this is a very partisan thing. This is, I'm sure, why Disney didn't want to distribute the film, even though they made it. But what it's going to do is once again, play exactly the game. Oh, George Bush is terrible, John Kerry's great, so this is how you should vote.
Well, my feeling on that is that I personally... I detest Kerry. I dislike him more than Bush, perhaps. But I think they both have the same agenda, as you and I know. I believe that Kerry will take us down towards dictatorship a bit faster because of a social agenda, a horrible social agenda. But I want to ask your audience a question here. Isn't it possible that the time has come when we've got to wake up the American people, and we've got to wake up those Republicans out there who think George Bush is God? Maybe the time has come, and maybe I want to ask your audience, what way, do they have any sort of a solution? Do they have any suggestion about how to wake up the sleeping Republicans, other than having Kerry get in there? And I think we've gotten to such a point in this country where
hold
we're
that
really...
Thought, hold that thought for just a moment.
Yeah.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Charlotte Isabey. And Charlotte is an author. She's certainly had key position in the Reagan Administration Department of Education. She's written The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. She speaks across the country, does an excellent job, very insightful, and of course, Charlotte's opinion, and I'm not necessarily saying I endorse or don't endorse it, but her opinion is we'd be better off with Kerry, not that he is any better than the current president, because he's not. And she acknowledges that. She says that he may even be worse. But maybe at that point, some of the good people in America would begin to wake up and realize that they have to be involved in this battle, and maybe there'd be a little opposition on the part of the Republican Party towards this current disastrous policy of globalization and going after an empire. They have to support the president. If John Kerry were pursuing exactly the same policy, there might be opposition. Would you agree with that, or do you think that is an apropos comment?
You did a very good, better job than I. I guess it's getting late for me.
Well, it is. It's almost midnight back
there. You did a better job than I. I was thinking about it today. I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who think I'm insane on this proposal of mine. But I would like to ask your audience if they can come up with a better way to wake up or to create opposition in this country to this globalist agenda, which is being followed by both parties at the top. I don't think there's any better way, because they're not allowed, or they're not smart enough, whatever, one or the other, they're not allowed to attack George Bush, who has the identical agenda to Kerry, with the exception, possibly, of his position on abortion, things like that, which I really am not so sure he's that dedicated anyway. But I would like the audience just to think about that. It's too late for us to go through another 4 years of this policy, this globalist policy being carried out without opposition.
But don't you think that Kerry will carry out exactly the same policy?
Oh, yes.
of rewarding the big corporations,
yes,
for taking their factories,
course,
overseas, and
yes,
rewarding them for taking their jobs overseas?
Yes. But he'll get, we'll beat up on him, but the Republicans won't beat up on Bush. So we will have opposition again in this country.
Well, that's an interesting thought. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, we'd love to hear what you have to say, whether you agree or disagree with Charlotte. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And Charlotte's suggesting that maybe if Kerry was elected, why there would be opposition to these globalist policies. And it certainly sounds like Kerry is going to continue the war on in the Middle East. And if we stay there long enough, we're going to be in World War III. And there's going to be simply not another World War III being fought in the Middle East. That war is going to extend into our own homeland with the ready availability now of intercontinental or even intermediate or short-range ballistic missiles. All you have to do is put one on a tramp steamer going by San Francisco or Los Angeles or New York or Washington, D.C., and you could have certainly attacks on the American mainland. And I do not believe that we are going to escape this time from either a technical point of view or from a spiritual point of view, because I believe behind everything going on, there is the spiritual battle, and I believe God's going to bring his wrath on this country. Because where is the outcry from the American people about the torture? Why, it was almost muted in its silence. And as I've read some of the articles that are written, well, after all, they're killing our soldiers. Why shouldn't we torture them?
Oh, it's terrible. I mean, the reaction is terrible. There is no reaction.
So let's get some people. We've got, is this Nelson calling from Spokane? Let's go to our first caller here, and we'll We'll take your calls in turn as they come in. Remember, it's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Nelson, what are your thoughts? Do you agree or disagree with Charlotte's contention?
That's exactly what I've been telling people. I think it would be much better to get Kerry or whoever else the Democrat is than Bush, because we'll stand up right now. The so-called religious right seems to practically worship him like God, and I feel I would guarantee that Bush will get reelected. He will continue to put his policies in. They will continue to allow him to walk on the Constitution, and it will get ready for someone even more evil who will then turn into a police state or something.
All right, I appreciate your thoughts. Anything else you'd like to say? Want to hang on until after the break, or is that have you said what you'd like to say?
I think that's pretty much it. I would say, urge the people, my fellow Christians out there, to wake up. And I really enjoy your show, and you're the only guy that seems to tell the truth.
God bless. Thanks very much.
You're doing a great job.
Thanks. Bye-bye. We'll be back in just a moment here with our special guest, Charlotte Isabey. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we've led up the board to Charlotte. You've done a great job. Let's go to Herman, who's calling from Flint, Michigan on a cell phone. Herman, are you there?
Oh, yes. How do you do, sir?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Well, not too bad.
All right. What are your thoughts? Do you agree with Charlotte, or do you disagree with her?
Well, I mean, these issues go back, you know, even to the Civil War,
right?
When we had the same issues at stake, and the sad part about it was that war in Vietnam that was brought upon us in 1961 was motivated to demoralize the American will to defend itself, and the designer of it had said that it was his ardent desire to see an end to nationhood for the United States. And the sad part of it was that young president we had then endorsed that approach. Now, if he didn't endorse it, and he was duped into doing it, you know, the sad part about it was that we had that situation in Cuba, and that was a godless, spiritualistic humanist way of life down there, and the former president was attempting to free those people. That was reversed. And also, the support of the UN, which was the purpose that we had to end our nationhood, Walter Rathskau, you know, was the point man.
Right.
That went in there, and he had written this book. And when he was questioned on it, when he was a professor at Princeton, he says, well, we must have the UN Charter usurp our Constitution, and we must conform to that point of view.
Walt Whitman Rathskau, yeah, one of my favorite people.
Yeah.
He reminds me of what Mark Twain said, was that he never knew a man he didn't like, but then he never met Walt Whitman Rathskau. Anyway, yeah. I hope you'll be listening on Thursday evening. We're going to do a two-hour program on Cuba, maybe give you a little different outlook on Cuba. How do you feel about what Charlotte has been saying about stand right now with the upcoming election?
Well, this is what scares me about the terrorcrats, as I see them. Because I remember back in the 60s when we had a proposal in their platform that they would take and inoculate all young ladies that came out of puberty. They'd have to go back down to the local government office to get permission to bear a child. They had
hold that thought for just a moment here. Okay, Herman, well, would you vote, who are you going to vote for president in November? Have you decided yet?
Well, back in the 60s, I was active and organized the Minnesota Tea Party. And some of those programs did come about, but it was primarily because of the urban renewal. And that's certainly what one of the globalist platforms.
Yeah, they're all there. But are you going to vote for Kerry, or are you going to vote for Bush?
Well, Kerry and the Democrats scare me because they are closet totalitarians,
right,
as far as I'm concerned.
Right, okay. I take that as a vote for Bush, or are you going to vote for a third party?
No, sir, I'm going to vote for Bush because it will prolong and...
the agony.
And the globalist point of view has been advanced, exponentially by the Democrats. Even Harry Hopkins, you know, sent the plans and heavy water to the Soviets back in 44-45.
Well, that's because he was a communist agent, and that is, of course, covered. Covering a book written by Major George Racy Jordan called, what was the title of that?
From Major Jordan's diary.
Hey, thank you so very much for calling. Herman, just keep right on listening. Let's go to Mark calling us from Richland, Washington. Hi, Mark. Mark, are you there?
Yeah, I'm there.
Okay, a question. Would you feel? Do you agree or disagree with Charlotte's contention?
I disagree with her.
Okay, fine.
I remember back in the Clinton administration, I guess it was his second term, and both houses were controlled by the Republicans, and they helped Clinton secure our membership in the World Trade Organization, as well as passing NAFTA and GATT. So...
Well, then why are you going to vote Republican?
No, I'm not. I'm going to vote for Michael Peruka.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Okay,
yeah.
Fine.
Yeah,
well,
good.
All right.
Okay.
Now, why are you going to vote for Michael Peruka? Tell me why.
Because I do not support this president, and I don't like the Democrats either.
In other words, you don't like either one, so you're going to vote for Michael. Would you like to put a plug in for Michael's presidency, since you're the only person who's brought him up?
Well, if you get on his website, Peruka2004.com, and it's the positions he takes are the positions that we all take as Americans.
All right. How do you spell Peruka? Because that's a real tongue twister. How do you spell Peruka? Do you know?
It's Peruka.
Mm-hmm. 2004.
Right.
Okay, Peruka2004. So, fine. Is there anything else you'd like to say, Mark?
Other than... Republican, Democrat, it doesn't matter. They're both headed in the same direction.
Mm-hmm. All right. God bless you. Thanks so much for calling in. And please get all your friends listening to our program. Let's go to, I guess this is another John. This one's calling from Yakima. Hi, John.
Hello.
Do you have a question or comment? Who are you going to vote for?
Right now, I don't know.
Okay, fine. Yeah.
I'm hoping that maybe Pat Buchanan will run. But that's just wishful thinking, I think.
I think it really is. I think that the characters are really pretty well before us. Certainly George Bush, the Republican, and certainly John Kerry is the Democrat. Some people have suggested maybe he's going to drop out and let, of course, the man who's been picked by the Bilderbergers run for the Democratic nomination. I don't believe that's true. I believe that John Edwards has been picked by the Democrats, pardon me, by the Bilderbergers, the people who run the world, to run as the vice president. Everything points in that direction. Isn't it amazing that not one newspaper in the United States, other than maybe the American Free Press, which is, sort of so anti-Zionist that it tends to discredit itself, but it's the only newspaper that has actually told us who attended that Bilderberger meeting. Of course, the one good thing is there's an article up on WorldNet Daily where you can get that information. So let's put a plug in for Michael Farah's publication. If you don't read WorldNet Daily, shame on you.
You mean
Mike Farah, I'm sorry.
Joe Farah.
Yeah. Right, Joe Farah.
Mm-hmm.
If I may, I'd like to make a suggestion.
Okay, go ahead.
I believe the American people and Catholics as well are not Catholics, but Christians as well, are far too willing to support politicians and support policies based almost entirely on rhetoric.
Yeah.
And I believe, for an example, our free trade policy, from what I've heard over the years, and I've tried to pay attention to it, what we have been given is very little, and the content of it is about 99% rhetoric.
You're absolutely right. And of course, what we have really done is set up a situation where we lose and they gain.
Yeah.
And of course, they can keep their tariff barriers and we take down ours, because
right.
It is all part of a long-range plan to redistribute the wealth of the American
right.
people to the rest of the world.
I have a suggestion. If I may, I'd like to make a suggestion.
Go right ahead.
That the American people demand that these politicians take part in a debate, a real debate, not like the one back in 92 where we had one guy saying it's a level playing field and we're all going to be rich, and the other guy saying it's going to be a big sucking sound. I don't, that to me is worthless. I want a real debate where anyone who's opposed to free trade, the experts get together, they develop a list of questions. And all those in favor can develop a list of questions, and then they confront the candidates with these questions, and then this thing, I want it to last at least 3 hours, and I want it to be put on the internet so that anybody can download the thing and listen to it in entirety at their leisure, because the American people, we are going blind, following blindly down a road to destruction, I believe. And we can't do this anymore.
I agree with you totally. I think, though, that we're not going to have fair debates. They're not going to allow Michael Perutka, and they're not going to allow any of the other candidates, the Libertarian candidate or the Reform Party candidate. You're going to have a choice of Tweedledum or Tweedledee, and they're going to argue back and forth like Amos and Andy and Laurel and Hardy.
I agree with you, but I'm appealing to all of your listeners out there. There are other ways. There are other alternatives. We have to demand... this system of self-government is a total fraud unless we are going to demand to be part of it.
We're not going to be spectators anymore. I'll tell you what, maybe I'll try to get Michael Perutka and the Libertarian candidate on, and maybe even the Green Party, the Reform Party candidate. Maybe we can arrange that, because I'm sure they're not going to be invited to the televised debates.
Yeah.
Well, God bless you.
I don't care whether it's televised. I want it on the internet.
All right. God bless you, John.
Okay.
Fine. Thanks. And it's great to hear somebody with as much passion as John has.
He's absolutely
this is what
correct.
We need. There's some people who have some passion. That old idea, our biggest problem is our apathy and ignorance.
Ignorance and apathy. Correct.
Right. Ignorance and apathy.
You know,
I don't know and I don't care.
Dr. Stan, who is really good on this issue, and it happens to be CNN,
But I wish that Rush Limbaugh would come out like this. But Lou Dobbs on CNN every night, I watch him. I'm devoted to that man. 6:30, he gets into free trade, he gets into immigration, and he has people voting on a poll. And he gets people in there, and he beats them up, and he tells them the truth about what's happening with free trade, in the quotes. And I can't believe that he is really allowed to do this.
Well, there's a quote for Lou Dobbs, and so listen
Dobbs,
to what he has
everybody.
To say. Why don't you call him sometime and ask him what he thinks about the Bilderbergers?
Yeah, I don't think he'll be talking. Well, who knows? He did talk about the big meeting. He mentioned it, I think.
Okay, well, let's go to a John from Post Falls, Idaho. Hi, John.
Hello there. My, it's the Knight of Johns, the beloved of gods.
Right.
I have three quick points. Number one, I think it's our solemn duty as biblical Christian citizens to do our homework and at least show up at the polls, even if we find the choices unacceptable. Point number two, I would never vote for John Kerry or any other bonesman. Point number three, I think our one hope of revival, given that we Americans corporately lack the moral righteousness to expect the kind of miracle that would seek Michael Peruca, although he'd be a great vote, as would the Libertarian candidate, I think our greatest chance is in the Congress. People like Dick Gephardt are retiring, and Bill Fetter is just an absolutely wonderful candidate, and I've been praying for him all along. And if we could get more people like Bill Fetter that would take the Constitution seriously, we wouldn't be nearly in the trouble that we're in.
Well, I could not say that I disagreed with anything you've said, and I think you're absolutely right. Bill Fetter is a personal friend. I love Bill. We've had him as guest many times. He's a Christian gentleman, and you know, if you're out there across America and you know, you don't like either people, a congressperson voting in your district, then if you'd like to know how to contribute to Bill Federer, you can call our 800 number. We'll put you in touch with him. Bill is doing a great job of getting the truth out, and I think he'll be a real attribute. I agree with everything you said.
Hey, Stan, could I make it? I want to make something clear to your audience.
Right.
I don't recommend that anybody vote for Senator Kerry. Absolutely not. I'm afraid your audience may feel that's what I've said. I recommend people vote for Peruca and split the vote to such an extent that we get rid of Bush. I would like Peruca to win, but it's unlikely he will. But I didn't say to vote for Kerry. How could you do that with your conscience? How could you vote for Bush? Either one of those two. Your conscience should be at play here. So it's simply my feeling is that we should vote for Peruca, see that we split the vote enough to get rid of this president who's been responsible for I don't know how many deaths on every side, and is surely going to lead us into even more catastrophe if we allow him to be in there.
Well, I agree almost with everything you say, except I really don't believe that George Bush is running anything. I believe he is a figurehead for the power structure
but
behind
him. But he's
the
captain of the ship.
Right. All right, fine. Well,
you should take responsibility.
Thank you very much, John. Let's go to Marilyn calling from Deer Park. Hi, Deer Park, Washington. Hi, Marilyn. How are you tonight?
Oh, I'm doing great. And it's Peruca, Peruca, Peruca. I can't say it enough.
Can you spell it, though? That's the question.
Oh, yes, indeed.
I'm
with the Constitution Party here
okay,
in Spokane,
fine.
Washington, and he's pro-life. He believes in the marriage between a man and a woman. And this is a constitution republic. That's the way our forefathers set it up. It is not a democratic, as it is said so many times on the radio. And he wants to put away with the UN, the FTAA, NATA, CATA. He's a wonderful man.
Bring our boys home.
Yes, bring our boys home. And he will be speaking with Chief Judge Roy Moore in Spokane June 29th at Shadle High School. I thought I'd slip that in, Dr. Stan.
You can certainly do. In fact, I hope you'll call a couple of times between now and then and slip it in again.
You bet.
Because alike, we have a lot of listeners in the Spokane area. We'd love to get a great group out to hear him speak.
They will also be speaking, the two of them, in Renton, R-E-N-T-O-N, Washington, June 30th, 7 p.m. at the IKEA Performing Arts Center.
All right, fine. So, you just give those dates once again. When is he going to be there? What are the dates?
Okay, June 29th, 7 p.m. at Shadle High School.
All right.
Anyone interested can go through Tickets West and get the tickets. It's $9 if you go through Tickets West, $12 at the door. Same thing in Renton, Washington, R-E-N-T-O-N, 7 p.m. at the IKEA, that's I-K-E-A, Arts Center.
And, of course, what date is that?
June 30th.
Okay, so one on the 29th and one on the 30th.
That's correct.
All right, fine. Well, if you want to just to sneak in again sometime between now and then and announce it again, because the old saying is you have to repeat things three times before anybody buys, or at least three times before people remember to come.
Yes, sir.
God bless you. Thanks so much, Marilyn.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let me just comment that as long as we're talking about that, we're going to have a special conference here in the Monterey Bay area on the 6th of November. Now, I know that's a long ways off, but we're going to keep repeating it over and over again until we hope some of you out there in the listening audience will want to come. It's going to be at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course, and we have it there every year. Have a great time all day long. Lunch will be served. And so if you're interested, why, of course, we'll be keeping putting more information out as we get closer. But keep that date, 6th of November. It's all day long on Saturday. We've got some great speakers already lined up, and we'd love to see you there. All right, Charlotte, we've only got a few more minutes before we go. And, of course, I could just put our number out one more time. It's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. And so if you have a question or comment, why, we'd love to hear your thoughts, whether or not you would agree with Charlotte that she doesn't want you necessarily to vote for Kerry. I assume she wants people to vote for a third-party candidate.
Yep.
And then, of course, the people are going to say, but if Kerry gets in, of course, then what do we do about our Supreme Court justices? And so let me bring that up to you, because certainly one of the most important things we could do would be to change the Supreme Court and put people on that Supreme Court who fear God and will vote to preserve our Constitution. So wouldn't we be better off, even if you don't necessarily agree with George Bush, at least he would appoint good judges?
Well, the record of Republican presidents appointing good judges is appalling. I mean, actually today, I read that this evening, there was a decision. The Supreme Court ruled that that rancher out in wherever it was, out west, did not have any rights when he was picked up by the police. He did not have a right to say, no, I'm not going to give you my identification, etc. And it was Stevens, who I believe is a liberal, who went against that decision. And then we had another decision. On the trucks coming in from Mexico, right? What's going on here? I think the Republicans better check the voting records of these wonderful stalwart judges that the Republican presidents have nominated.
Well, I think that seven of them, of the nine current Supreme Court justices, some of the worst judges we've ever had were appointed by Republican presidents.
Right.
So maybe it really doesn't mean anything. In fact, William Pryor, who was recently appointed as one of the interim appointees by George Bush, gave a talk recently talking about the emblem on the back of the dollar bill. This emblem of the ancient secret societies used by the Masons, used by the Illuminati, used by the Rosicrucians, been around for 6,000 years. And he's telling us that this is how we worship our God. Because after all, it says God favors our goal, our purpose here. And, you know, if he knows that little about the history of America or the history of that secret emblem on the back of the dollar bill, I'd say that if he is ever appointed to the Supreme Court, and why everybody's expecting he will be nominated, this is the man who betrayed Judge Roy Moore after promising to support
right.
him and then turned on him. If he is appointed to the Supreme Court, why he will make Ruth Bader Ginsburg look like a conservative.
That's right.
Well, let's go to Edward, who's calling us from Utica, New York. Hi, Edward. How are you doing?
Hello, Dr. Stan.
Have a quick question or comment.
Yes. I have been listening for a few months to your program. We receive it on WJIV here.
Right.
We are in complete agreement with what you've been talking about, but unfortunately I believe that the church in general is so lax in knowledge of the Word of God that they are just led by the nose into everything that is being said by those who are politically correct.
But our job then is to try to educate them, because they're good people, Edward.
Yes, that's true.
All good people, and we just need to try to reach them and overcome this spiritual blindness that seems to have seized them.
Well, that's true, and you know what concerns me is that people have not analyzed what President Bush has been doing, even behind the scenes, or even what's been stated. He's promoting the One World Agenda, and it just does not seem to hit home.
No.
And when he still approves of all the statements that Clinton has made through his administration, has never attacked any of those executive orders, I just can't trust that.
Well, you know, it's the most amazing thing, Edward. You and I can see this, and Charlie can see it, and the other people can't, but I really believe there's a spiritual blindness out there that seized our people, and all we can do is pray for the people, pray that they will see what's going on, and then stand there, you know, as the prophets of old, and say, this is what's going on. And, you know, I believe God has called me, and I believe he's called you and everybody else in this listening audience to be willing to take a stand and, you know, to do what's right and to point out what's happening to our country and to explain it by bringing about this understanding we're involved in a spiritual battle, as you well know, between good and evil. And there really are satanic organizations, and there really are demonic forces. And if you haven't seen this wonderful video we have, they sold their souls for rock and roll. You'll hear some of the rock stars talking about how they sold their souls, knowing full well, and I believe there are other people in our society today, even some in government, who've done the same thing. Hey, we're out of time, but thank you so much for calling, and thank you so much for listening up there.
I will be voting for Mr. Prook.
Good.
And so I just wanted you to know that.
God bless you.
Good.
Thanks so much.
All right.
Bye-bye. Well, Charlotte, do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners this
evening?
Well,
I would like them to go to my website, which is deliberatedumbingdown.com. The three Ds, deliberatedumbingdown.com, and click on articles, because there are quite a few articles that I've written that deal with a lot of what we've talked about tonight, but especially George Bush. There's an article I wrote which is entitled Walk Like a Duck, Talk Like a Duck. And I point out right in there that George Bush basically is carrying out a complete, full-fledged socialist, if not communist, agenda. And people have got to read that. It's documented. And as unpleasant as the facts are, they've got to read that. And then ask yourself, who are you going to vote for? So I would like them to do that. DeliberateDumbingDown.com.
Okay, that's DeliberateDumbingDown.com. Now, Charlotte has written a wonderful book by that same title, which we just happen to carry here at Radio Liberty, The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and go to Charlotte's website, deliberatedumbingdown.com. And God bless you, Charlotte. Thank you so very much for staying up late to be with us tonight. I'll tell you, I don't think we've ever had more calls on any program, at least on this evening program, than we had tonight. So you really opened up a hornet's nest.
Stirred up the troops.
You know what's so encouraging now, admittedly, the people who listen to our programs are pretty well educated, but it's amazing how many people would tend to agree with you.
Yeah, it makes a bit of sense, really.
God,
we need opposition to this globalist agenda, not just opposition when it's a Democrat in there, right?
God bless you. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, that was Charlotte Isabey, and if you haven't got our book, Deliberate Dumbing Down, we do carry that here, as well as so many other books on education. We carry, of course, the Fed Ed book. We even have a four-tape set on Fed Ed, and that's the story of this No Child Left Behind, the Bush administration's plan to destroy our children's belief in God and family and country. But it's really not the Bush administration's plan. It's Teddy Kennedy's plan that the Bush administration got enacted. So, in fact, George Bush, Herbert Walker, and his son, they have a family foundation, and they gave an award to the senator who had done the most for America. And who was it? just happened to be Teddy Kennedy. Well, it's amazing how these things do happen. Well, this is the time when we need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we're dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs and believe in what we're doing, and we do hope that many of you want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us as we reach out 5 hours every weekday by radio and shortwave and internet and satellite, and then our Saturday program, which reaches 35 stations across America. We are having an impact. People are listening. People are learning. And then there's so many other voices. Certainly, we're not going to accomplish it alone, but we're not alone. There are a lot of other people out there, whether it be John Loeffler or Chuck Chrismeyer or certainly Stan Solomon, and Alex Jones and certainly Joyce Riley and Pastor Butch Paugh and so many of the people that are on the television, pardon me, on radio and shortwave across America. They're reaching an awful lot of people. So believe me, there is a growing awareness of what's going on that we never had before. And now with the Internet, I've been at this game for 42 years, and I'm more enthused now than I've ever been before because we're reaching more people than we ever have before. So I give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. You need to read it. You need to read it a couple of times. We have the same story on a video. It's called Brotherhood of Darkness. Or if you want to get really elaborate, The Secrets of the Illuminati, that's about 2.5 hours, if you can stand watching me talk for 2.5 hours. But there's a lot of good information there. We have two new videos. One is called Iraq, The Road to World Government, and the other one is called Sustainable Development, The Road to World War III. Two new one-hour videos of talks that we've given. We think that they're well worthwhile. Of course, our video, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, going into how the United States funded the Soviet Union starting in 1918, and then how we funded the Nazi movement, and how we funded the North Vietnamese, because how else could that little country the size of the state of Mississippi stand against the United States, the most powerful nation in the world, and fight them for 10 years and defeat the United States of America if the American government wasn't subsidizing and financing the North Vietnamese? Of course we were, because the war was never fought to defeat communism or never fought to prevent the dominoes from falling. It was fought to change America and to bring in the great society. And if you don't believe that, you simply read what McGeorge Bundy wrote in the January 1967 issue of Foreign Affairs magazine. That's January 1967, an article entitled The End of Either Or, written by McGeorge Bundy, member of Skull and Bones, a national security advisor to the President of the United States, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and close friend of Henry Stimson, Secretary of War during the Second World War. Skull and Bones, CFR, all the regular qualifications. Pray for America. Remember our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Till tomorrow, may the Lord be with you. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But this evening, we're going to be talking for Arthur Bernclough, who really spends his time campaigning for veterans' rights. And one of the great tragedies of every war is the men who go off to fight the wars with, of course, the bands playing and the flags waving, and of course they fight and they go through terrible experiences, and many of them are mortally wounded, and some of them will carry the pains of their wounds for the rest of their lives, and then they come back again, and they may have shattered health emotionally or physically, and then of course they're more or less cast aside. This is the way it always is. After all, as Henry Kissinger said, and he's quoted by Woodward and Bernstein in their book, The Final Days, on page 194. That's The Final Days by Woodward and Bernstein, page 194. I think Henry Kissinger expressed the opinion of the elite who rule the world by saying, military people are stupid, dumb animals to be used for foreign policy purposes, and that's why Henry Kissinger wasn't worried about the stupid, dumb animals. He betrayed those courageous young men who went to Vietnam to fight for freedom. At least they thought they were fighting for freedom. And he betrayed them, thousands of them. There were probably at least 1,000 in North Vietnam and another 1,000 or more in Laos. Nobody ever came home from Laos. And, of course, the reason he betrayed them, he made a deal with the North Vietnamese that the Americans would give them $4 billion if they would let us out of the war that he'd gotten us into so they could transform America. And the North Vietnamese agreed to that, but for some reason they just didn't trust Henry, and they didn't trust Richard Nixon. And so it was that they kept back part of the boys. They returned part of them, and they kept the rest of them until they got their money. And then Henry Kissinger did not have the courage to let the American people know that he had made the deal like that. Oh, he was afraid the American people would be angry, and Richard Nixon excused it all. Oh, it was Watergate, and there's nothing I could do. No, Richard Nixon was a dishonest man. He's always been a dishonest man. I could forgive him for Watergate. After all, he was protecting his friends, but to abandon those boys and then to lie to the American people and condemn them to a death, a living hell, and some of them are still there. And Richard Nixon, of course, was actually rejuvenated by the media and to the cheers of the crowd, but he really didn't care about the men he set off and betrayed in Vietnam and in Laos. So, of course, then those who do come home. And Arthur Bernkow, of course, works with them, with the Veterans Administration, because so much of the Veterans Administration is not designed to care for our veterans, but, of course, to placate them, to pat them on the head, to give the impression that they're there, but, of course, really to work within the financial constraints of the money that they have available, to spend most of their money on lawyers to fight the veterans, to keep them from getting benefits. And there's a few voices out there, people like Arthur Bernkow, who's given his life in this battle to try to represent the veterans. Hi, Arthur. How are you doing tonight?
Thank you, Dr. Spann.
Well, with you, of course, on the front lines of this battle and working with a bureaucracy that really is totally crass and indifferent to the suffering of the brave young men who've gone overseas believing they were fighting for freedom. Apparently, you've written an article about the Veterans Administration. Is that what you want to talk about tonight?
Well, that's one of the things, and I'd like to say first, may God bless and protect our armed forces, and I just wish there was a method of sending the children and grandchildren of those in Congress into Iraq and Afghanistan, and then I'll bet an acceptable solution would quickly be found. Void of that happening, every new day is going to witness the deaths of more Americans on foreign soil, and this is a situation that really just should not be.
Well, of course, the thing is that the idea that we had to go into Iraq because we were fighting terrorism just isn't true. I mean,
right.
We should have finished up the battle. We should have taken out Al-Qaeda. We should have tracked down Osama bin Laden. Do you mean to tell me that a nation that has satellites that can read a newspaper from the sky, can read a license plate from the sky, we can't find Osama bin Laden? Of course we can find him. We need an enemy out there. We need somebody that can rally the radical Islamic people against America so we can continue fighting this war, so we can keep the American people rallied behind the government as we keep our troops permanently stationed in the Middle East, as we move against Saudi Arabia, as we move against Iran, as we move against Lebanon, and these are and Syria. This is all what is laid out. This is what William Crystal talked to Ted Koppel about. He was interviewed there. We actually covered much of this in one of my newsletters. And William Crystal told Ted Koppel. And, of course, who's William Crystal? He's the director of the Project for the New American Century. He made it very clear we're going to replace the governments in Lebanon and in Syria and in Iran and in Saudi Arabia. And, of course, by talking about that, by being so brazen about that, while we're inflaming the anger and hostility of Muslims throughout the world who look upon this as a return of the Crusades, and there is no way that they are going to follow America because they really don't trust America. And we made sure of that by intentionally releasing those pictures of what happened in Abu Ghraib prison. And then, of course, to even make it more to disillusion the American people, we told the story of Tillman. You remember he was the Arizona football player? Now, why would you suddenly admit that he was killed by friendly fire if you weren't trying to disillusion and discourage the people at home and divide our country? I mean, they can do anything they want to with propaganda. We saw what they could do with the story of Jessica Lynch.
Oh, my God, yes.
You know, this was a totally contrived story. So why were they so honest and just full of integrity? We just had to let you know that Tillman died for absolutely nothing. It was friendly fire. And, of course, they're playing games with the minds of the American people. And somebody released that story intentionally to discredit what we're doing over there and to divide our country, American against American, as we mobilize the rest of the world against our own country. These people are masters of deception, masters of deceit. And it's about time the American people ask, not what is the story, but why are they putting it out? What are they really trying to make me believe? And how are they manipulating me? Well, Arthur, you pick up the story there about our veterans, because right now there are over 22,000 veterans from this war, from Iraq and from Afghanistan. We're trying to get care in the Veterans Administration Hospital right now, and they've got all sorts of diseases. These aren't all people
That's
who were
right.
shot. They've got psychological diseases. They've got muscle aches. They've got muscle pains. They sound so much like the Gulf War illness that the government said doesn't exist. And now well over a third of the men we sent over there, they've given disabilities to for a disease that the government insisted year after year after year after
Didn't
year
exist.
There is no Gulf War illness.
Yeah.
And they were lying.
And a lot of them are going to come up with things over the next few years that we don't know about yet. And it's going to happen. A lot of them are going to get sick in the years to come. And they're going to end up having to go to the Veterans Administration to be treated, and God knows what kind of treatment, if any, that they're going to get. And, you know, I joke about one thing in particular. Where is Osama bin Laden? Everybody's looking in Afghanistan. Everybody's looking in Iraq. And I joke about this, but it's really not funny. I keep saying, Osama bin Laden has opened up a 7-Eleven store in Brooklyn, New York, and he's there urinating in everyone's coffee and laughing at us.
Well, I will tell you, Arthur, I hope that our listeners will all want to get a copy of my latest newsletter because it deals specifically with who is Osama bin Laden. Why is it that we cannot capture Osama bin Laden? Those who heard...
Because we don't want to capture him.
You're absolutely right. Anybody who heard the Slick Willie on Sunday evening on CBS. Ah. I mean, he lied and lied and lied, but I think the one thing he said was true. That was probably the only thing he said was true. You know, he said, Paula Jones, I didn't do anything to her at all. I just wanted to get rid of her. That's why we gave her all that money. But I didn't do anything there at all, you know. But I lied about Boddicka and I lied about Susie Flowers, but you can believe me on that. But one thing he did say, and I thought was so interesting, he said that on two occasions, he had told the CIA to kill bin Laden. Now, the CIA has to have permission of the president to kill somebody. And I think that's really true because it was corroborated in William Clark's book, who also said that Clinton had repeatedly told the CIA to kill Osama bin Laden, and they refused to do it. They were supposed to cut off the funding for al-Qaeda. they refuse to do it, just like George Bush has refused to cut off the funding that's going to Osama, to Al-Qaeda right now. In fact, the recent testimony by Stephen Emerson to the 9/11 Commission, he cites organization after organization after organization in America that's funding the Islamic terrorist movement, and they continue funding. And of course, the CFR put out a report recently saying that George Bush has refused to put pressure on Saudi Arabia to stop funding Al-Qaeda. This is almost 3 years after the 9/11 attack. If we're really involved in a war on terrorism, and Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda are really the enemy, why haven't we put pressure on our good friends in Saudi Arabia to stop funding the people who killed 3,000 Americans? And I think every American should ask that same question. But I'm going to be quiet now and let you pick up the story, Arthur. Go ahead.
Well, I have an article that's going to be appearing shortly in Parade magazine. Unless the government comes in and intimidates somebody and kills it. And it's called The Big Lie and the Grand Deception, and it's what the American people are not being told. And if any of you people listening in have watched the television and on Memorial Day, and I'm sure a lot of people have watched it on Memorial Day, and all joking aside, it was a very, Memorial Day is a very solemn day for veterans and people who have fought wars. But on this last Memorial Day weekend, the people of our great nation viewed our media's conception of Washington, D.C.'s incredible ballyhoo tribute to the brave men and women who fought the good fight in World War II to defend our way of life in America. But something here is drastically wrong. And the ceremonies and speeches were beautiful, and yet they were extremely flawed. Many important facts were and still remain hidden. Now, we have an administrative agency here in the United States which is entrusted with the responsibility of seeing that our disabled and combat injured veterans receive the benefits that they're entitled to by the laws of our land. And this agency is called the Department of Veterans Affairs, and better known to all of you as the VA. And the best-kept secret in America, however, is that most of these injured vets stand little or no chance of ever getting their benefits due to the predatory policies of this most corrupt government administrative agency, many of whose employees do include executives, adjudicators, rating board members, and attorneys, pay each other cash bonuses to claims to deny claims to disabled veterans, their families, and their survivors. And it's a sad and it's an outrageous fact that out of 100% totally disabled injured veterans, only a mere 4% will ever collect the full benefits due to them, thanks to the greed of the agency that oversees these benefits distributions. Now, a very close examination of the Veterans Administration's very own VACOLS records. Now, VACOLS stands for, that's V-A-C-O-L-S. It stands for the Veterans Appeals Control and Locator System. A very careful examination will quickly reveal the VA's use of their despicable smoke and mirror tactics. And we have veterans who have walked the corridors of time for 20, 30, 40, and yes, even 50 years and more of being denied their benefits despite incontrovertible evidence in their favor toward their claim.
Now, I think what's so interesting, we point out that actually the people who work for the Veterans Administration get bonuses for denying claims. And the more claims you can deny, the bigger your bonus. Would that be how it works?
Oh, my God. That's the story in a nutshell. And the GAO, the Government Accounting Office, since their famous report of 1987 and many, many subsequent reports since, have been unable to do anything about this outrage, nor is anyone else. This inability is a direct result of the protection given to this outlaw agency, the VA, by Congress and the National Veterans Service organizations who are in the pocket of the VA and don't want to rock their gravy train. And everyone listening in is probably saying, the veterans organizations? Yes. I'll give you a handful right now. I'll give you five of the biggest. The DAV, Disabled American Veterans, Veterans of Foreign Wars, the American Legion, AMVETS, and the Military Order of the Purple Heart. And they really don't want to ruck their own gravy train. Now, even with the team, with the VA's team of former Arthur Anderson Enron auditors, yeah, the VA hired these Arthur Anderson Enron auditors. They're now executives with the VA. Even with their team of former Arthur Anderson Enron auditors, the VA cannot cover up the fact that veterans are still adjudicating claims for malaria and gunshot wounds from World War II.
Now, wait a minute. I thought that some of those people from Enron went to prison. Did they go to prison, or they just got nice, fat government jobs?
They got nice, fat government jobs.
Okay, go ahead.
And most of them ended up with the Veterans Administration.
Okay.
And they found a home
in
the Veterans Administration. Now, all of this with the World War II veterans and the gunshot wounds and malaria, all this is from 62 years ago. And I'm saying, for shame, VA and all others who protect this rat system of extortion from our nation's veterans. Now, it's very easy to cure what the VA calls is a backlog of claims. The World War II vets are dying at the rate of about 1,500 a day. To clear the claims, either deny them, knowing that the existing mortality rate says that it'll take them a year or two to get back and hear the claim again, and by that time they might be dead, or grant them a 10% disability effective today for a claim that should have been 100% effective in 1946. Cleared indeed. That's how the VA clears their backlog. And by taking their hospitals and turning hospitals into clinics, the VA forces sick veterans to return each day on an outpatient basis, and this runs up the volume of patients statistically to make the VA look good to Congress to try to get more money for the VA, and it downgrades the care provided. On April 8th, now this is very important, on April 8th, 2004, at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, was probably about 7 o'clock out there in California, ABC News Primetime ran an expose of the deplorable conditions of Veterans Administration hospitals, including the unbelievable corruption of some of their administrators and executives. The program was the best of its genre and focused mainly on the Cleveland, Ohio, and Temple, Texas systems. Two of the worst VA systems ever. Now, VA Secretary Anthony Principi was supposed to be interviewed on that program, but begged off, stating that he was ill that day, leaving an incredible VA buffoon to be interviewed by Diane Sawyer. This monumental program hit the nail right on the head of what is wrong with the VA system. Now, this part was the good news. Now, we have the bad news, and the bad news was, since April 8th, 2004, not one newspaper in America picked up on this program and the story that it told because of the VA's press corps. 2,220 people, 2,220 VA spinmeisters whose sole job is to keep all negative news about the VA out of the media. They did their job very well this time. And these people are paid between $65,000 to $85,000 a year.
Wouldn't it be better just to give that money to the veterans instead of trying to keep the information and the truth from the American people?
It would solve problems.
We're going to be back here in just a moment or two with Arthur Birnbaum. And if you have any questions at all, Arthur's a man to talk to. Of course, we'll give his telephone number later if you're a veteran. And you're getting the runaround as you find that you will in the Veterans Administration. Why, you can give us, you can get in touch with them off the air, or you can get in touch with them on the air. It always makes it more interesting if we have the callers. So remember our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Arthur Birnbaum, with the Veterans Group. What's the name of your group, Arthur?
Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited.
All right, fine. And Arthur is out there trying to make sure that these people get some legal advice. And, of course, they're not going to get it through the regular Veterans Administration organizations or the regular veterans organizations because they all, of course, are on the take. Don't they get a free office space and free office supplies and all sorts of goodies for the government for being goody?
Here's what they get. Free rental space in any VA buildings or hospitals. They get all their postage paid, telephones paid, telephone charges, stationery, all their furniture, all their computer equipment, a staff to run the office, and, of course, they get a tax-exempt status. And they are supposed to be representing veterans. Instead, they are representing the VA because they know which side of the they know which side their bread is buttered on. And when I say representing the veterans, according to the VA laws, there's one called 5904. A veteran is not allowed to have an attorney represent him on his claim until they get a final decision from the Board of Veterans Appeals, and that process takes on the average of 7 years. By that time, the veteran either gets either he expires, or he gets so frustrated in fighting his claim, he gives up out of terrible frustration.
But don't you think this is really part of the plan? It's sort of like the way they play the American people. They, you know, they give us all sort of conflicting information.
Oh, exactly.
They play on our emotions, you know, and, of course, there's so much information out there. The average individual just doesn't know where to turn or what to do, and it drags on and on and on. And pretty soon his whole mental attitude is altered, and eventually to get away from the frustration, he just throws up his arms and says, well, I'm just going to forget it.
Exactly. Now, this is the perfect example of it. We talked before about 2,220 VA spinmeisters whose sole job is to keep all negative news about the VA out of the media. Now, these people are paid between $65,000 to $85,000 a year to ply their trade and intimidate the media. And there's 30 of them in every regional office, every VA regional office, times 70 offices. And there's about 120 of them in the central office in Washington. And they're being hidden under unrelated job titles. So if anyone from Congress wants to know where are they, they're hidden under unrelated job titles.
And of course, now, they're influencing what the American people think. We've got Phil, who's calling us from Flint, Michigan. Hi, Phil. Did you have a question or comment for Arthur?
Yes. Is Arthur a lawyer?
No, I don't think you are. Are you a lawyer?
No, I do a lot of reading in most of the law libraries, but I'm not a lawyer. I don't intend to be. I'm just doing this to help as many veterans as I possibly can.
Excellent. I'm not a lawyer either, but I am a seeker of unimpeachable truth. And just for the sake of discussion here, there is the rumor of reinstituting the draft. Okay. Now, there's legally binding criteria for everything. Taxpayer status, was it Joe Bannister out there in California, I think, elucidated taxpayer status criteria pretty well. Now the feds are trying to put them away. In the case of the draft...
Oh, hang on there, Phil, for just a minute. We want to pull our other stations in. Okay, well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Arthur Bernclough. Phil is calling in from Flint, Michigan, and he was asking about reinstituting the draft. Of course, we're talking about Veterans Administration benefits, but so where are we going now? Yes, there's talk very definitely about reinstituting the draft. We do not have enough people in the military at the present time, and so they're talking about beginning to draft both men and women so we can continue maintaining our forces not only throughout the world, but moving into the Middle East, which is the long-range plan to dominate that region. So what did you want to know, Phil?
Okay. For the comment and then the question, the comment on the draft is the legally binding criteria is you have to ignorantly acquiesce into agreeing to be a U.S. citizen resident. okay, U.S. citizenship has a very real specific criteria. Okay, I live, reside, or am domiciled in the District of Columbia or a federal territory. Virtually no one resides in a federal territory, although by a clever, deceptive, insidious use of the zip codes and addresses, which legally binding mean a ceded federal corporate territory, then people acquiesce into being U.S. citizen residents. But it's only true U.S. citizen residents qualify for the draft. The question is, since the soldiers sign a contract when they enter the service.
It's not a contract.
Pardon me?
It isn't a contract.
It's not a
contract. They are told it's a contract, but it is not a contract at all. It is not a legal contract, and it is not binding because Congress never passed a law to make it binding.
Okay.
Well,
go ahead, Phil.
Okay, my opinion then, what needs to be done is Congress needs to withdraw, rescind, or suspend its congressionally granted privilege to the executive branch for the use of executive orders and PDDs, bring all the soldiers home out of those 120 or 130 countries, seal off the borders, protect our borders from foreign invasion, and allow the jets, the military jets, to respond to any outside terrorist threat.
Well, we're hoping that's going to happen, but it's not going to happen because there's pending legislation in both the House and the Senate. There are twin bills there, S-89 for the Senate and H.R. 163 for the House, which it's going to initiate the program of the draft in spring 2005, and Mr. Bush will be getting the House bills in March of 2004. After the election, he'll, assuming he's still president, he'll be getting that. If not, Mr. Kerry will be getting that, and the draft will go into effect.
Well, and everybody needs to know the fact that the legally binding criteria is, in fact, U.S. citizenship, and the fact of the matter is the vast majority of Americans are not U.S. citizens.
Well, the difficulty with that,
oh,
Pat,
yes.
The difficulty with that, I Phil, and I wouldn't want to argue that with you, but the way they are today, they'll just ship you out of the country if you're not a citizen. And they, you see, they're not interested in what the laws are. This is all about power. And I've talked to many people who talk about the common laws and these concepts, and I said, you know, you're going to be the smartest guy in the camp. We're moving into a dictatorship. I will tell you, you argue with the guards in the dictatorship, you know, about whether or not you should be there or not, and they're going to simply laugh at you. What we've got to do is educate the American people about what's really going on and the fact that there is a move to destroy our Constitution, to take away our freedom, and to continue this war and to send our children overseas to die.
Hey, East L.A. will be like a ghost town. It'll be deserted.
Right.
The Constitution was suspended, let's see, when was it? Under executive order, I believe it was, when the Bretton Woods agreements came into effect.
But they still operate under, at least under the color of it, because they don't want the American people to know we are actually operating under the emergency orders. And anybody wants, we have a wonderful article. It came out in 1972 by Congressman, pardon me, by Senator Frank Church and one of the other senators who were trying to point out that we were under executive, under emergency orders at that time. We're still under emergency orders, but we've got to educate the American people, Phil.
I think we'll have to get back to the veterans.
We've got to get back to Veterans Administration, but thanks so much for calling. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty.
Thank you, Phil. I'll tell you, there's so many aspects.
is Dr. Stan Mack here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this evening is Arthur Bernclough, and we just had Phil on the line, and there is a great deal of truth in what Phil is saying, but from a practical point of view, why it's not going to accomplish anything. What we have to get people to do is understand our freedom, our Constitution, and that we're losing that. You know, there was an article on WorldNet Daily today that they have a new program here. It's called the Future of Freedom, I think it is, or Operation Freedom, or something about freedom. Of course, the New Freedom, I think that's the title of this. The New Freedom, and what they're going to do under the New Freedom is begin analyzing and checking everybody for mental competency, looking for symptoms of mental disorders. Now, anybody who, of course, doesn't believe, or anybody who believes that there's a move towards a world government, anybody who believes that their Council on Foreign Relations is a conspiracy, anybody who believes that why everybody in this country doesn't come under the control of the federal government, they're obviously mentally deranged, and they're going to have to be put on medication, and that is what this is talking about. Now, go to WorldNet Daily, the article appeared today, and I think it's called The New Freedom. The president has said he's going to check every American citizen for signs of mental disease. Well, I think there are going to be a lot of people that I think that the people who feel as I do that we're losing our freedom must be diseased. And down the line, it'll be the people who believe in Jesus Christ and have religious beliefs, because they're out of keeping with, of course, the rest of the beliefs that anything really goes. Those who are intolerant, who believe that there are such things as bad religions, or that there's a real devil, or that they believe that Christianity is the only way to God. Obviously, these people have to be mentally sick. They're going to have to be medicated, and you laugh at those ideas. And yet, of course, they're putting children, almost one in every six boys in grammar school today is on medication, being treated for his, he's too hyperactive. He's a he has ADD or ADHD or something like that. Could that happen in America? And I'd like to suggest it could. It can, and it will happen, unless there are enough Americans who care and are willing to take a stand to preserve our freedom. Well, our guest this evening is Arthur Bernclough. We're talking about the Veterans Administration and the organized effort to limit the ability of our veterans to get the disability benefits that they're entitled to, and they actually reward people who work within the Veterans Administration for turning down the claims. And the more people claims you turn down, and the more people you hurt, why the bigger your bonus. That's the way the VA works. Right back to Arthur in just a moment. Well, Dr. Stan, back here. Arthur, you pick up the story from there.
Okay. We were talking about the spinmeisters of the VA's press corps. Now, about a year or so ago, when 12 rating board members from the Atlanta, Georgia regional VA office were sent to prison. Now, that was including the congressional liaison who had been with the VA for 25 years. They were sent to federal prison for a scam that was robbing the families of dead veterans out of $11.2 million of benefits by substituting their own claim numbers for that of the dead veterans. Now, the VA's press corps did their job very well, because only the Atlanta Constitution and the Chattanooga Times carried the story about Atlanta VA's Dirty Dozen. Now, it seems like the VA, and I'll quote you this, the VA keeps pleading poverty. They haven't got enough money. Give us more money on the budget. We never have enough money. But it seems like if the VA could afford to hire these 2,220 press corps spinmeisters for $65,000 to $85,000 a year, pay millions of dollars a year of VA freebies to each of the chartered National Veterans Service organizations. By the way, we were offered our charter. We will refuse our charter. We don't want a charter from the VA or Congress. We don't want to have to take orders from them. Now, they'll pay millions of dollars a year worth of VA freebies to each of the chartered National Veterans Service organizations to make sure that disabled veterans do not obtain real legal representation on their benefits claims, and maintain a multitude of bonus programs for VA employees to deny claims, but they never have enough money to take care of our nation's disabled vets, and they always plead poverty to Congress to get more funding. Well, the answer does not lay in giving the VA more money, but in an honest redistribution of the money, and we feel that the VA cannot be reformed because of the vast amount of deeply entrenched corruption within the system, and the public is being misled when they are actually led to believe that their government is taking care of its veterans and military retirees and honoring the promises that were made to them. Now, at the Memorial Day ceremony in the Capitol, Washington, D.C., seems to have forgotten the shabby treatment that it's given to the brave World War II survivors of Bataan and Corregidor. That's our honored class of 1941-1942. These heroes were never defeated in battle. They were starved into submission, waiting for reinforcements promised to them, which never came. Most of the survivors were taken to Japan, where they were used as slave labor for 4 to 5 years. And recently, in the lawsuit brought by these veterans against the industrial giants in Japan, like Mitsui and Mitsubishi and Oneida Cement, who enslaved them, our Justice Department put all of their attorneys at the disposal of the Japanese lobby and their defense to see that the veterans case was thrown out of court. And let's not forget the congressional bill, which has been brought up almost every year since the end of World War II, to have the VA indemnify these few brave survivors for $20,000 each. Little enough payment for their suffering under the Japanese brutality for 4 to 5 years. It never seems to pass the House Veterans Affairs Committee to get out on the floor of Congress for a vote without being boondoggled and killed in committee. And yet, now get this, everybody of Japanese extraction who were interned even for one day after the attack on Pearl Harbor were indemnified for $20,000 by our Congress. And this is the reward given to our bravest who fought for months to stall Japan and give us vital time to rebuild our Navy, which was destroyed at Pearl Harbor. Now, I remember seeing a New York Times picture of Attorney General back then, Richard Thornburg, who went to Japan on bended knee to hand this Japanese woman a $20,000 check. It was front page news there in the New York Times. And these veterans have never been indemnified by 1 cent, and that bill has been going since the end of World War II. Well, we don't have much time.
Well, what I think, though, Arthur, what most people don't understand is there is a very close relationship between the industrialists of the United States and the industrialists of China.
Oh,
and
yes.
We made sure after the Second World War that the industrialists who built up the Japanese war machine, most of them, with very, very few exceptions, got their factories back. And, of course, they were subsidized by the United States, massive amounts of money given to get the Japanese economy going. And many of our major corporations are deeply involved with all of these Japanese corporations, and that is why we don't want to give anything to those veterans any more than they want to compensate or give the veterans who were or the people who were tortured under Saddam. I guess it was under the Iranian regime or the Iran? No, it was under the Iraqi regime. They were captured by Saddam Hussein and mistreated, and they've won a massive settlement in court here.
Yeah.
And our government is on the side of the Iraqis.
Getting
anything. You have to understand that the wicked people working at the upper echelons of our government have no loyalty to our people. Their loyalty is to a different group. To the globalists, to the Japanese manufacturers, to the people who will be controlling Iraq in the future. They don't want that money to go to the people who were tortured. They want it to go to the hand-picked people we're putting to position in Iraq today. And if anybody thinks that the new government over there represents the Iraqi people, they don't understand.
You can bet it doesn't.
The man we put in charge just happened, just by accident, to have been working for the CIA for many years. In fact, his job was to go into Iraq and blow up cars and school buses with the children and kill a lot of people to create this impression that there was an uprising to overthrow Saddam Hussein. That is what we were doing. We mean we'd blow up cars and school buses? And why, if we would do that in Iraq, who's behind what's going on in Saudi Arabia today. Well, that's a different subject. But why don't you pick up the story there? Because I share with you your concern that these veterans, those people who survived the Bataan Death March, some of them were actually taken into Manchuria, where they were experimented on by the Japanese there. Horrible and grotesque experiments, and many of them, of course, died as a result of that. And, of course, we never punished those Japanese who were in charge of that.
Right.
In fact, General Shiro Ishii was actually, the story is he was brought to the United States and well rewarded, as long as he would turn over his macabre experiments to us. And the only place that it's ever been mentioned in America was on the X-Files. If you watch the X-Files,
I did.
Do you remember the story of Shiro Ishii?
I sure did.
And that's the only... you had to watch the X-Files to find the truth about what was going on in the past.
Dr. Ben, this has been my passion for years, to see that these people somehow get what's coming to them. And we don't have much time left because they're all in their late 80s to 90s now. They're in their late 80s to middle 90s. And we don't have much time. There's not many of them left. And remember, these people were all heroes, and if it wasn't for them stalling the Japanese attack for almost 5 months and giving us the vital time to rebuild our destroyed Navy, we would all be talking Japanese today. And the grand deception, tell you what the grand deception is. This is what I call promises made to young military enlistees, which are never kept. Now, in November of 2002, our government very quietly, by a 9-4 federal court decision, discontinued the promise of free health care after military retirement for serving 20 to 30 years. This is only part, although it's a very large part of the grand deception. And what I'm saying is it doesn't matter that for generations, the Secretary of the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, and all the military recruiters have been promising this as an inducement to get people to serve. They say unless Congress passes a law, the benefit is discontinued. And considering our mean-spirited Congress, this is not likely to happen. And the media has an obligation to inform our nation about the people in government responsible for these moral shortcomings involving veterans, military retirees, and the military.
Well, Arthur, let me just clarify this from my thinking. Before, you served 20 or 30 years in the military, then you could go to any military hospital, or would you get your medical care through the VA after your retirement?
After retirement, you would get your military care, not from the VA, but from the Department of Defense. Department of Defense would authorize it. And you'd usually go to the nearest military base to your home.
Okay, fine.
So sometimes they authorize treatment at a VA hospital, but not as often as a military base.
Okay, fine. That was good treatment. I mean, they have good doctors in the military.
Oh, excellent treatments on base, usually.
Okay, pick up the story from there. Then, of course, they've just simply, after these people have spent the 30 years expecting they'd get their free medical care, which they've been promised, why unilaterally the government said, sorry, fellas, this is no longer the case. We don't have the money for you. We've got to send it over to give it to the Afghan people or to give it to the Halliburton over there in Iraq or something of the sort.
And if you serve 20 to 30 years, that's tough. And, the young people of enlistment age, they've got to be protected and told the truth. Because the young people, they're our future. And if God is going to save the Republic, we need these young people
the one thing they need to learn is what our founding fathers realized, and that is you cannot trust government. And as Thomas Jefferson said, in politics, speak not to me of confidence in men, but bind them down for mischief with the chains of the Constitution. And that's what our founding fathers believed. You couldn't trust government. And I think that anybody who joins the military and trusts the government just doesn't understand history or human nature.
Well, I was in Washington over the last week, and I had a call from a friend here, and he calls me up and he says, did you listen to Mr. Bush's speech? And I said, what? Are you kidding? I couldn't listen to Mr. Bush's speech. I didn't want to miss a Gilligan's Island rerun. That, to me, is more important than anything this guy Bush has to say, and that goes double for Kerry. I don't care what either one have to say. Neither one is good for our country. And when I keep hearing people say, oh, I'm voting for the lesser of two evils, where are we going, Dr. Stan, voting for the lesser of two evils? Evil is still evil. It's with us.
I wish you could have listened to our last program. We had about 9 callers on it, and we asked the question, should you vote for Bush or Kerry? And I think 8 of the people were going to say neither of the above.
Great. You're getting a better class of people out there than I'm getting here on the East Coast.
Okay, well, go ahead now. What are some of the other points you'd like to make?
Okay. I got a letter here from a Sergeant Art Morin in Florence, South Carolina. And he's got his own envelopes printed up. He's got a picture of the VA emblem, and on there it says VA motto, deny, delay, deceive. Man had a letter published by his local newspaper out in South Carolina. And it's a letter to the editor, and it showed a picture of an elephant crying here. Veterans health care rules not being followed. I have learned from face-to-face conversations with many veterans that the desires of our Congress and Senate are not being fulfilled by the various Veterans Administration medical centers. How's that? Part of the law which was passed by our leaders in the year 2000 states, if a veteran happens to have an emergency life and death situation, the veteran may use any medical facility, and the VA medical center will pick up the charges. I'll change that. A fully disabled veteran can use any medical facility, and the VA medical center has to pick up the charges according to the law. There's a further clause in the law stating that the veteran must have seen a VA doctor within the past 24 months. Additionally, it's stated that once the veteran is stabilized, that veteran needs to be transported to the nearest Veterans Administration Medical Center. Now, the law doesn't say that the CEO of the local Veterans Administration Medical Center makes the decision if the condition is a serious emergency or not. There is no mention that the CEO will determine when the emergency terminates, nor does the CEO decide whether a patient is in a condition to be moved unless he sends a qualified VA medical doctor to evaluate the patient's condition. Failure to follow the specified rules result in all sorts of excuses being used by many VA medical centers throughout the nation to exempt themselves from financial responsibility of payment for emergency conditions treated by civilian institutions. Once the VA medical center makes the statement that they are not liable and refuse to pay such expenses, the veteran is left to seek legal assistance. There are many veteran service organizations willing to provide legal assistance. Not real lawyers, but these jokers wearing the three-piece suits there. But if accepted by the veteran runs the risk of not receiving fair treatment under the law, because many veteran organizations owe their loyalty to the Veterans Administration, because they are given free rental facilities at all VA medical centers in order to, in quotation marks, assist the veterans. Additionally, the veteran has to file and seek assistance within a 2-year filing period allowed by VA law. It's up to the veteran to find reliable legal assistance, as mentioned above, at his own expense. There are many such atrocities that the veteran must meet in order to get any kind of assistance from the Veterans Administration, and these things seriously affect those returning from Afghanistan and Iraq with serious wounds and other required treatment options. And that's Sergeant Art Morin in Florence. Now, Sergeant Morin came to me about a year and a half ago with this situation. He had an emergency operation on a brain aneurysm. Went to the VA. The VA said they weren't equipped to handle the situation, so he ended up at the University of South Carolina Medical Center. And so happens to be the doctor that performed the surgery was the same one who would have performed the surgery if it was done at the VA, but the VA had said they don't have the facilities there to perform that type of surgery. So he had the surgery done at the State of South Carolina Medical Center, State University Medical Center. and the VA is refusing to pay this. Now, we've gotten him attorneys, and he's got attorneys fighting the VA. They have refused to pay the medical center. In the meantime, this man's credit, his credit status is down the drain because, of course, he can't pay that kind of bill himself. So this is what the VA does to people across the whole country with the nonsense that they're pulling, that they don't pick up these bills that the law says they have to pick up. It's up to the individual medical center and up to the individual CEO of the medical center whether those bills are going to be picked up. And this is only one case, and his lawyer seems to be dragging in fighting this thing, and he asked me, what do I do in that case? I said, you've got to put it to him. Show me what you're doing. If you're not returning my calls, I'm going to get myself another lawyer. Look, lawyers can get fired the same as anyone else. He says, can you get me another lawyer? I said, if you want, we'll get another lawyer for you. But the man is any of these people who come across an emergency situation and the VA is supposed to pick up the tab, the VA hardly ever picks up the tab, and they always have to go through a fight like this. And this shouldn't be.
Was he a 20-year veteran? What?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so he was entitled then to be taken care of, and he should have been taken care of by a military hospital, only they're not doing it anymore. And this is what he had been promised, but of course the promise from the government and $2 to get you a cup of coffee any place.
Well, you see, this is a highly specialized surgery. As you know, the a brain aneurysm in a military base does not have the facility to handle anything
like that. No, but
you
would ordinarily, if you were a military base, why then you would send him to another military base. And there, you're certainly at Walter Reed Hospital or Bethesda.
Right.
There are always major medical facilities where they would have the training to do that. Sure, they could. But obviously, they just didn't want to bother because they really didn't care. And this is the great tragedy that we cast aside our veterans like used toilet paper.
Well, the thinking is, if the veteran is dead, we don't have to pay him a disability or benefits anymore. And we can pay the wife off at about a third on a DAC, dependency, it's called a dependency allowance. We can pay the wife off at only about a third of what we're paying the husband if the husband was still alive. And that's their way of thinking there. If he dies, so what? He's expendable and we'll save money.
What a tragic commentary, and yet this is the problem, and I'm just so glad that you're there, Arthur, to help these people. Let's tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you and your organization.
Okay, we're Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited. It's Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited, and we're located at 112 Jefferson Avenue, that's number 112 Jefferson Avenue, in Port Jefferson, New York, Port Jefferson, New York, and our zip code is 11777. For those of you who are card players, it's Full House, 11777. And we can be reached by telephone, 631-474-4261.
Give the number one more time.
631 area, 474-4261. Our fax number is 631-474-1968. And nobody from our organization is receiving a salary. We're all volunteers. Any salaries received does not exceed $1. And we're here to help, whatever way we can help. And we operate mainly on what all the people in our organization put into it, whatever donations we put in, plus whatever donations we receive from veterans and from the public. And we appreciate that the veterans community is one of the poorest communities in the country. And we're here to help you. That's what we're here for. And if anyone has a problem with the VA, Department of Defense, and they want to talk about it, my name is Arthur Bernklau. And I'm at your service to help you whenever I can.
Well, Arthur, I appreciate what you're doing for the veterans. I appreciate your dedication to trying to do what's right. And are you still going on that trip? You're going to have something done surgically before you go.
Well, I'm still going on the trip, and I have to see an orthopedic surgeon Thursday morning.
All right, you let us know what happens off the air.
Yeah, I'll still be there, even if I have to swim to Vietnam.
God bless you. Thanks so very much for everything you do,
Arthur. Thank you, Dr. Stan, for having me.
Good night. God bless. Okay, fine. That was Arthur Birnclough, and he's a man who really feels very, very deeply about the injustice that's being done to the veterans, the men who fought for our country. And, of course, once they have fought for it, they're simply cast aside. And this is a great tragedy, but it's the way a bureaucracy works. And the one thing you must understand is that it takes an awful long time to realize that you can't trust government. Our government, any other government, and especially once the country has lost its moral foundation, once we've taken God out of our government completely, are you surprised at all that people don't honor their word, a government doesn't honor its word? And this is the message we have to get out. We're involved in a spiritual battle. If we don't reclaim a moral high ground, our moral position as a great and noble nation, then, of course, the city on the hill, the beacon of light, the hope of all mankind will be destroyed. It was Abraham Lincoln who said, you know, at what point should we expect the approach of danger? By what means should we fortify ourselves against it? Should we expect some transatlantic giant to step the ocean and crush us with a blow? Never. Then at what point should we expect a danger to be expected? And I answer, if it ever reaches, it must spring up among us. It can never come from abroad. If destruction be our lot, then we ourselves must be its authors and its finishers. As a nation of free men, we shall live through all time or die by suicide. And I'd like to suggest that's just what's going on in our America today. We're dying by suicide. We're allowing the people within the secret organizations, the secret occult organizations, who hate God, to take God out of our schools and prayer out of our schools and the Ten Commandments out of our buildings, and to persecute people who stand up for righteousness. And the vast majority of people support all of those things, and it is just a small group of people, and specifically we have 2 million Masons in the United States, and many of them are in key positions. And it was while the Masons controlled our Supreme Court between 1941 and 1971 that they took God and prayer out of our schools. But Masonry is simply one of the occult organizations. The reason that they didn't, of course, impeach William Jefferson Clinton wasn't because the Senate was lazy. It was simply because William Jefferson Clinton was the highest ranking demole, that is a young Mason, you know, in the country. And, of course, Trent Lott, who led the Senate at that time, was a 33rd degree Mason. He could not impeach or do anything against a fellow Mason. He's sworn these horrible oaths to protect fellow Masons. And Bill Clinton, even though he was not a Mason, he would be protected by those oaths as the highest-ranking demole in America. You remember who Jacques demole was? He was burned at the stake because he was a Luciferian. And you better find out what's going on. You better understand the secret societies. You better understand behind everything going on today. There is a spiritual battle going on. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. Or my video by the same title, you need to get the information that's available on our website about the secret societies that exist, what we know about the influence of the Illuminati in the United States. We actually have something we got from from the Library of Congress, from the Jefferson Collection, from the James H. Billington's own office, on the Clintonian Illuminati, written in 1803. You'll never find that any other place. We have the documentation here at Radio Liberty, and we do what we do, trying to get people to understand this is not a political battle. This is not an ideological battle. This is not a cultural battle. It's a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. If you'd like a free copy of my newsletter, call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. Please pray for my ministry of Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so, until Thursday evening, when we'll be back with you once again, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you. this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But this evening, we're going to be talking for Arthur Bernclough, who really spends his time campaigning for veterans' rights. And one of the great tragedies of every war is the men who go off to fight the wars with, of course, the bands playing and the flags waving. And of course, they fight and they go through terrible experiences. And many of them are mortally wounded, and some of them will carry the pains of their wounds for the rest of their lives. And then they come back again, and they may have shattered health emotionally or physically, and then, of course, they're more or less cast aside. This is the way it always is. After all, as Henry Kissinger said, and he's quoted by Woodward and Bernstein in their book, The Final Days, on page 194. That's The Final Days by Woodward and Bernstein, page 194. I think Henry Kissinger expressed the opinion of the elite who rule the world by saying, military people are stupid, dumb animals to be used for foreign policy purposes, and that's why Henry Kissinger wasn't worried about the stupid, dumb animals. He betrayed those courageous young men who went to Vietnam to fight for freedom. At least they thought they were fighting for freedom. And he betrayed them, thousands of them. There were probably at least 1,000 in North Vietnam and another 1,000 or more in Laos. Nobody ever came home from Laos. And, of course, the reason he betrayed them, he made a deal with the North Vietnamese that the Americans would give them $4 billion if they would let us out of the war that he'd gotten us into so they could transform America. And the North Vietnamese agreed to that, but for some reason they just didn't trust Henry, and they didn't trust Richard Nixon. And so it was that when, of course, our boys did, they kept back part of the boys. They returned part of them, and they kept the rest of them until they got their money. And then Henry Kissinger did not have the courage to let the American people know that he had made the deal like that. Oh, he was afraid the American people would be angry, and Richard Nixon excused it all. Oh, it was Watergate, and there's nothing I could do. No, Richard Nixon was a dishonest man. He's always been a dishonest man. I could forgive him for Watergate. After all, he was protecting his friends, but to abandon those boys and then to lie to the American people and condemn them to a death, a living hell, and some of them are still there. And Richard Nixon, of course, was actually rejuvenated by the media and to the cheers of the crowd, but he really didn't care about the men he sent off and betrayed in Vietnam and in Laos. So, well, of course, then those who do come home. And Arthur Bernclough, of course, works with them, with the Veterans Administration, because so much of the Veterans Administration is not designed to care for our veterans, but, of course, to placate them, to pat them on the head, to give the impression that they're there, but, of course, really to work within the financial constraints of the money that they have available, to spend most of their money on lawyers to fight the veterans, to keep them from getting benefits. And there's a few voices out there, people like Arthur Bernclough, who's given his life in this battle to try to represent the veterans. Hi, Arthur. How are you doing tonight?
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Well, you, of course, on the front lines of this battle and working with a bureaucracy that really is totally crass and indifferent to the suffering of the brave young men who've gone overseas believing they were fighting for freedom. Apparently, you've written an article about the Veterans Administration. Is that what you want to talk about tonight?
Well, that's one of the things, and I'd like to say first, may God bless and protect our armed forces, and I just wish there was a method of sending the children and grandchildren of those in Congress into Iraq and Afghanistan, and then I'll bet an acceptable solution would quickly be found. Void of that happening, Every new day is going to witness the deaths of more Americans on foreign soil, and this is a situation that, that really just should not be.
Well, of course, the thing is that the idea that we had to go into Iraq because we were fighting terrorism just isn't true. I mean,
right.
We should have finished up the battle. We should have taken out al-Qaeda. We should have tracked down Osama bin Laden. You mean to tell me that a nation that has satellites that can read a newspaper from the sky, can read a license plate from the sky, we can't find Osama bin Laden? Of course we can find him. We need an enemy out there. We need somebody that can rally the radical Islamic people against America so we can continue fighting this war, so we can keep the American people rallied behind the government as we keep our troops permanently stationed in the Middle East, as we move against Saudi Arabia, as we move against Iran, as we move against Lebanon, and these are and Syria. This is all what is laid out. This is what William Kristol talked to Ted Koppel about. He was interviewed there. We actually cover much of this in one of my newsletters. And William Kristol told Ted Koppel, and of course, who is William Kristol? He's the director of the Project for the New American Century. He made it very clear. We're going to replace the governments in Lebanon and in Syria and in Iran and in Saudi Arabia. And, of course, by talking about that, by being so brazen about that, while we're inflaming the anger and hostility of Muslims throughout the world who look upon this as a return of the Crusades, and there is no way that they are going to follow America because they really don't trust America. And we made sure of that by intentionally releasing those pictures of what happened in Abu Ghraib prison. And then, of course, to even make it more to disillusion the American people, we told the story of Tillman. You remember, he was the Arizona's football player. Now, why would you suddenly admit that he was killed by friendly fire if you weren't trying to disillusion and discourage the people at home and divide our country? I mean, you know, they can do anything they want to with propaganda. We saw what they could do with the story of Jessica Lynch.
Oh my God, yes.
You know, this was a totally contrived story. So why were they so honest and just full of integrity? We just had to let you know that Tillman died for absolutely nothing. It was friendly fire. And, of course, they're playing games with the minds of the American people. And somebody released that story intentionally to discredit what we're doing over there and to divide our country, American against American, as we mobilize the rest of the world against our own country. These people are masters of deception, masters of deceit. And it's about time the American people ask, not what is the story, but why are they putting it out? What are they really trying to make me believe? And how are they manipulating me? Well, Arthur, you pick up the story there about our veterans, because right now there are over 22,000 veterans from this war, from Iraq and from Afghanistan. We're trying to get care in the Veterans Administration Hospital right now, and they've got all sorts of diseases. These aren't all people
That's
who were
right.
shot. They've got psychological diseases. They've got muscle aches. They've got muscle pains. They sound so much like the Gulf War illness that the government said doesn't exist. And now well over a third of the men we sent over there, they've given disabilities to for a disease that the government insisted year after year after year after
didn't
year
exist.
There is no Gulf War illness.
No.
And they were lying.
And a lot of them are going to come up with things over the next few years that we don't know about yet. And it's going to happen. A lot of them are going to get sick in the years to come. And they're going to end up having to go to the Veterans Administration to be treated, and God knows what kind of treatment, if any, that they're going to get. And, you know, I joke about one thing in particular. Where is Osama bin Laden? Everybody's looking in Afghanistan. Everybody's looking in Iraq. And I joke about this, but it's really not funny. I keep saying, Osama bin Laden has opened up a 7-Eleven store in Brooklyn, New York, and he's there urinating in everyone's coffee and laughing at us.
Well, I will tell you, Arthur, I hope that our listeners will all want to get a copy of my latest newsletter, because it deals specifically with who is Osama bin Laden. Why is it that we cannot capture Osama bin Laden? Those who heard...
Because we don't want to capture him.
You're absolutely right. If anybody who heard the... the Slick Willie on Sunday evening on CBS. Ah. I mean, he lied and lied and lied, but I think the one thing he said was true. That was probably the only thing he said was true. You know, he said, Paula Jones, I didn't do anything to her at all. I just wanted to get rid of her. That's why we gave her all that money. But I didn't do anything there at all. You know, but I lied about Boddicker and I lied about Susie Flowers. But you can believe me on that. But one thing he did say, and I thought was so interesting, he said that on two occasions he had told the CIA to kill Bin Laden. Now, the CIA has to have permission of the president to kill somebody. And I think that's really true because it was corroborated in William Clark's book, who also said that Clinton had repeatedly told the CIA to kill Osama bin Laden, and they refused to do it. They were supposed to cut off the funding for al-Qaeda. They refused to do it, just like George Bush has refused to cut off the funding that's going to Osama, to al-Qaeda right now. In fact, the recent testimony by Stephen Emerson to the 9/11 Commission, he cites organization after organization after organization in America that's funding the Islamic terrorist movement, and they continue funding. And, of course, the CFR put out a report recently saying that George Bush has refused to put pressure on Saudi Arabia to stop funding al-Qaeda. This is almost 3 years after the 9/11 attack. If we're really involved in a war on terrorism, and Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda are really the enemy, why haven't we put pressure on our good friends in Saudi Arabia to stop funding the people who killed 3,000 Americans? And I think every American should ask that same question. But I'm going to be quiet now and let you pick up the story. Go ahead.
Well, I have an article that's going to be appearing shortly in Parade magazine, unless the government comes in and intimidates somebody and kills it. And it's called The Big Lie and the Grand Deception, and it's what the American people are not being told. And if any of you people listening in have watched the television and on Memorial Day, and I'm sure a lot of people have watched it on Memorial Day, and all joking aside, it was a very... Memorial Day is a very solemn day for veterans and people who have fought wars. But on this last Memorial Day weekend, the people of our great nation viewed our media's conception of Washington, D.C.'s incredible ballyhoo tribute to the brave men and women who fought the good fight in World War II to defend our way of life in America. But something here is drastically wrong. And the ceremonies and speeches were beautiful, and yet they were extremely flawed. Many important facts were and still remain hidden. Now, we have an administrative agency here in the United States which is entrusted with the responsibility of seeing that our disabled and combat injured veterans receive the benefits that they're entitled to by the laws of our land. And this agency is called the Department of Veterans Affairs, and better known to all of you as the VA. And the best kept secret in America, however, is that most of these injured vets stand little or no chance of ever getting their benefits due to the predatory policies of this most corrupt government administrative agency, many of whose employees do include executives, adjudicators, rating board members, and attorneys, pay each other cash bonuses to claims to deny claims to disabled veterans, their families, and their survivors. And it's a sad and it's an outrageous fact that out of 100% totally disabled injured veterans, only a mere 4% will ever collect the full benefits due to them, thanks to the greed of the agency that oversees these benefits distributions. Now, a very close examination of the Veterans Administration's very own VACOLS records. Now, VACOLS stands for, that's V-A-C-O-L-S. It stands for the Veterans Appeals Control and Locator System. A very careful examination will quickly reveal the VA's use of their despicable smoke and mirror tactics. And we have veterans who have walked the corridors of time for 20, 30, 40, and yes, even 50 years and more of being denied their benefits despite incontrovertible evidence in their favor toward their claim.
Now, I think what's so interesting, we point out that actually the people who work for the Veterans Administration get bonuses for denying claims. And the more claims you can deny, the bigger your bonus. Would that be how it works?
Oh my God, that's the story in a nutshell. And the GAO, the Government Accounting Office, since their famous report of 1987 and many subsequent reports since, have been unable to do anything about this outrage, nor has anyone else. This inability is a direct result of the protection given to this outlaw agency, the VA, by Congress and the National Veterans Service organizations, who are in the pocket of the VA and don't want to rock their gravy train. And everyone listening in is probably saying, the veterans organizations? Yes. I'll give you a handful right now. I'll give you five of the biggest. The DAV, Disabled American Veterans, Veterans of Foreign Wars, the American Legion, AMVETS, and the Military Order of the Purple Heart. And they really don't want to rock their own gravy train. Now, even with the team, with the VA's team of former Arthur Anderson Enron auditors, yeah, the VA hired these Arthur Anderson Enron auditors. They're now executives with the VA. Even with their team of former Arthur Anderson Enron auditors, the VA cannot cover up the fact that veterans are still adjudicating claims for malaria and gunshot wounds from World War II.
Now, wait a minute. I thought that some of those people from Enron went to prison. Did they go to prison, or they just got nice, fat government jobs?
They got nice, fat government jobs.
Okay, go ahead.
And most of them ended up with the Veterans Administration.
Okay.
And they found a home
in
the Veterans Administration. Now, all of this with the World War II veterans and the gunshot wounds and malaria, all this is from 62 years ago. And I'm saying, for shame, VA and all others who protect this rat system of extortion from our nation's veterans. Now, it's very easy to cure what the VA calls as a backlog of claims. The World War II vets are dying at the rate of about 1,500 a day. To clear the claims, either deny them, knowing that the existing mortality rate says that it'll take them a year or two to get back and hear the claim again, and by that time they might be dead, or grant them a 10% disability effective today for a claim that should have been 100% effective in 1946. Cleared indeed. That's how the VA clears their backlog. And by taking their hospitals and turning hospitals into clinics, the VA forces sick veterans to return each day on an outpatient basis, and this runs up the volume of patients statistically to make the VA look good to Congress to try to get more money for the VA, and it downgrades the care provided. On April 8th, now this is very important, on April 8th, 2004, at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, was probably about 7 o'clock out there in California, ABC News Primetime ran an expose of the deplorable conditions of Veterans Administration hospitals, including the unbelievable corruption of some of their administrators and executives. The program was the best of its genre and focused mainly on the Cleveland, Ohio, and Temple, Texas systems. Two of the worst VA systems ever. Now, VA Secretary Anthony Principi was supposed to be interviewed on that program, but begged off, stating that he was ill that day, leaving an incredible VA buffoon to be interviewed by Diane Sawyer. This monumental program hit the nail right on the head of what is wrong with the VA system. Now, this part was the good news. Now, we have the bad news, and the bad news was, since April 8th, 2004, not one newspaper in America picked up on this program and the story that it told because of the VA's press corps. 2,220 people, 2,220 VA spinmeisters whose sole job is to keep all negative news about the VA out of the media. They did their job very well this time. And these people are paid between $65,000 to $85,000 a year.
Wouldn't it be better just to give that money to the veterans instead of trying to keep the information and the truth from the American people?
It would solve problems.
We're going to be back here in just a moment or two with Arthur Bernclaw. And if you have any questions at all, Arthur's the man to talk to. First, we'll give his telephone number later if you're a veteran. And you're getting to run around, as you find that you will, in the Veterans Administration. Why, you can give us, you can get in touch with him off the air, or you can get in touch with him on the air. It always makes it more interesting if we have the callers. So remember our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Arthur Bernklau, with the Veterans Group. What's the name of your group, Arthur?
Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited.
All right, fine. And Arthur is out there trying to make sure that these people get some legal advice. And, of course, they're not going to get it through the regular Veterans Administration organizations or the regular veterans organizations, because they all, of course, are on the take. Don't they get a free office space and free office supplies and all sorts of goodies for the government for being goody?
Here's what they get. Free rental space in any VA buildings or hospitals. They get all their postage paid, telephones paid, telephone charges, stationery, all their furniture, all their computer equipment, a staff to run the office, and, of course, they get a tax-exempt status. And they are supposed to be representing veterans. Instead, they are representing the VA because they know which side of the they know which side their bread is buttered on. And when I say representing the veterans, according to the VA laws, there's one called 5904. A veteran is not allowed to have an attorney represent him on his claim until they get a final decision from the Board of Veterans Appeals. And that process takes on the average of 7 years. By that time, the veteran either gets either he expires or he gets so frustrated in fighting his claim, he gives up out of terrible frustration.
But don't you think this is really part of the plan? It's sort of like the way they play the American people. They, you know, they give us all sort of conflicting information.
Oh, exactly.
They play on our emotions, you know, and, of course, there's so much information out there. The average individual just doesn't know where to turn or what to do, and it drags on and on and on. And pretty soon his whole mental attitude is altered, and eventually, to get away from the frustration, he just throws up his arms and says, well, I'm just going to forget it.
Exactly. Now, this is the perfect example of it. We talked before about 2,220 VA spinmeisters whose sole job is to keep all negative news about the VA out of the media. Now, these people are paid between $65,000 to $85,000 a year to ply their trade and intimidate the media. And there's 30 of them in every regional office, every VA regional office, times 70 offices. And there's about 120 of them in the central office in Washington. And they're being hidden under unrelated job titles. So if anyone from Congress wants to know where are they, they're hidden under unrelated job titles.
And of course, now, then they are influencing what the American people think. We've got Phil, who's calling us from Flint, Michigan. Hi, Phil. Did you have a question or comment for Arthur?
Yes. Is Arthur a lawyer?
No, I don't think you are. Are you a lawyer?
No, I do a lot of reading in most of the law libraries, but I'm not a lawyer. I don't intend to be. I'm just doing this to help as many veterans as I possibly can.
Excellent. I'm not a lawyer either, but I am a seeker of unimpeachable truth. And just for the sake of discussion here, there is the rumor of reinstituting the draft. Okay. Now, there's legally binding criteria for everything. Taxpayer status, who's it? Joe Bannister out there in California, I think, elucidated taxpayer status criteria pretty well. Now the feds are trying to put them away. In the case of the draft...
Oh, hang on there, Phil, for just a minute. We want to pull out of their stations in. Okay, well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Arthur Bernklau. Phil is calling in from Flint, Michigan, and he was asking about reinstituting the draft. Of course, we're talking about Veterans Administration benefits, but where are we going now? Yes, there's talk very definitely about reinstituting the draft. We do not have enough people in the military at the present time, and so they're talking about beginning to draft both men and women so we can continue maintaining our forces not only throughout the world, but moving into the Middle East, which is the long-range plan to dominate that region. So what did you want to know, Phil?
Okay, for the comment and then the question. The comment on the draft is the legally binding criteria is you have to ignorantly acquiesce into agreeing to be a U.S. citizen resident. Okay, U.S. citizenship has a very real specific criteria. Okay, I reside or am domiciled in the District of Columbia or a federal territory. Virtually no one resides in a federal territory, although by a clever, deceptive, insidious use of the zip codes and addresses, which legally binding mean a ceded federal corporate territory, then people acquiesce into being U.S. citizen residents. But it's only true U.S. citizen residents qualify for the draft. The question is, since the soldiers sign a contract when they enter the service...
It's not a contract.
Pardon me?
It isn't a contract.
It's not a contract.
They are told it's a contract, but it is not a contract at all. It is not a legal contract, and it is not binding because Congress never passed a law to make it binding.
Okay. Go ahead, Phil.
Okay, my opinion then, what needs to be done is Congress needs to withdraw, rescind, or suspend its congressionally granted privilege to the executive branch for the use of executive orders and PDDs, bring all the soldiers home out of those 120 or 130 countries, seal off the borders, protect our borders from foreign invasion, and allow the jets, the military jets, to respond to any outside terrorist threat.
Well, we're hoping that's going to happen, but it's not going to happen because there's pending legislation in both the House and the Senate. There are twin bills there, S-89 for the Senate and H.R. 163 for the House, which it's going to initiate the program of the draft in spring 2005, and Mr. Bush will be getting the House bills in March of 2004 after the election. He'll, assuming he's still president, he'll be getting that. If not, Mr. Kerry will be getting that. And the draft will go into effect.
Well, and everybody needs to know the fact that the legally binding criteria is, in fact, U.S. citizenship, and the fact of the matter is the vast majority of Americans are not U.S. citizens.
Well, the difficulty with that, Phil, and I wouldn't want to argue that with you, but the way they are today, they'll just ship you out of the country if you're not a citizen. And they're not interested in what the laws are. This is all about power. And I've talked to many people who talk about the common laws and these concepts, and I said, you know, you're going to be the smartest guy in the camp. We're moving into a dictatorship. I will tell you, you argue with the guards in the dictatorship, you know, about whether or not you should be there or not, and they're going to simply laugh at you. What we've got to do is educate the American people about what's really going on and the fact that there is a move to destroy our Constitution, to take away our freedom, and to continue this war and to send our children overseas to die.
Hey, East L.A. will be like a ghost town. It'll be deserted.
Right.
The Constitution was suspended, when was it? Under executive order, I believe it was, when the Bretton Woods agreements came into effect.
Well, they still operate under, and they said at least under the color of it, because they don't want the American people to know we are actually operating under the emergency orders. And anybody wants, we have a wonderful article. It came out in 1972 by Congressman, pardon me, by Senator Frank Church and one of the other senators who were trying to point out that we were under executive, under emergency orders at that time. We're still under emergency orders, but we've got to educate the American people, Phil.
I think we'll have to get back to the Veterans.
We've got to get back to Veterans Administration, but thanks so much for calling. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty.
Thank you, Phil. I'll tell you, there's so many aspects.